You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
So yeah, we're starting this series called Christmas at the Movies 2, and obviously last month was a little bit heavy, so it'd be fun to have some fun, and so as far as our series. And so this is really, we just found some Christmas movie clips, and I'm bringing a biblical point out of it. There's really nothing spiritual about these clips themselves, probably at all spiritual about these clips. But that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to have some fun with it. Also, I just want to mention that the Giants are on a 2-game win streak. So they've won 2 in a row, which means that brings their total of wins up to 3. So I thought it's time to break out the Giants shirt just to boast in this wonderful team. So what we're going to be looking at today is a scene from the movie Christmas Vacation. Now, I will say that, you know, it's rated PG, but it was done in the 80s, and it probably would be definitely on the PG-13 side, maybe even pushing the rated R side, maybe, in some of the content. So it's not necessarily completely family-friendly, at least not with a remote, to be able to fast forward through the spots or maybe mute some things. But anyway, in this particular scene, and I want you to pay attention, this is the kind of the culmination of what has been happening throughout the movie of Christmas Vacation, where all the Griswold family is joining at Clark's house for their Christmas dinner. And you know, throughout the movie, and you'll even see in this scene, you get to realize that, man, there's just some messed up people in Clark's family. You've got Cousin Eddie, who you'll see, he's in the leisure suit. And you've got his aunt, his great aunt and uncle, Aunt Bethany. And there's just a bunch of messed up people. But at the very beginning of this scene, as Clark is getting ready to cut the Christmas turkey, there's a sense of pride that you see in his eyes, a sense of joy for being there. And so that's where this scene picks up. Just watch it, and then we'll talk a little bit about what's going on here.
Before we begin, since this is Aunt Bethany's 80th Christmas, I think she should lead us in the saying of grace.
Oh, great. Oh. What, dear? Grace! Grace! She passed away 30 years ago.
They want you to say grace. The blessing!
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Amen.
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 Catherine, this turkey tastes half as good as it looks. I think we're all in for a very big treat.
Save the neck for me, Clark.
Okay, Eddie.
Look at that.
Sorry.
Why are you crying?
I told you we put it in too early.
Oh, it's just a little dry. It's fine.
The pulse.
Here's the heart.
So what are we learning this morning? We're learning that Christmas Vacation shows us the value of family at Christmas. And what I want to talk about is just that scene, that idea of how messed up the Griswold family is. And how, you know, you look at that and go, man, my family is not messed up. My family is so normal and perfect. Or perhaps, like everybody, you're like, no, actually, that's kind of like my family in some ways. There's some people that are a little bit obnoxious. There's some people that are rude. There's some people that don't know any better, that they mean well. And one of the, I remember reading this recently that said, you know, if you can't figure out who the crazy person is in your family, it's you. So just keep that in mind. If you can't think of who's the crazy person in my family, that means you're the crazy person. And so we're going to be talking about this idea of family and what does family mean and why is family valuable and some things that are not easy, I realize, and looking at that in a little bit. Can you back me down just a hair, Isaac? I'm sorry. I'm just getting a little bit of echoey in my own head. There we go. So we're going to be looking at this one verse in 1 Timothy chapter 5. And so if you hit the house lights there in 1 Timothy 5, if you've got a paper Bible, you can turn there. It's going to be on the screen. It is on the screen. And again, a new version that's near the New Testament or at the end of the New Testament. It's going to zing all the way down. Or I still can't figure that out. Whatever this is, whatever you have to do to that, it'll bring you to the Timothy. We're in 1 Timothy chapter 5. And a little bit of context here. 1 Timothy 5. Paul is writing to Timothy, and Timothy is a young pastor. He's pretty new at this. He's probably in his 20s or 30s. And Paul is giving him some instructions in Ephesus, where Timothy is a pastor, and giving some instructions on how to lead the church. And a couple of weeks ago, I know we looked at 1 Timothy 4:12. And if you grew up in church, especially if you grew up in church youth group, 1 Timothy 4:12, do not let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech and life and love and faith and impurity. That's that verse that we're like, yeah, you know, you matter. And I think actually just last a couple of weeks ago, we talked about our example and said, you know, don't just say I'm young, so it doesn't matter. Be an example to everyone around you. But anyway, so that's the context of this book, of these two books Paul is writing to Timothy. And in this particular chapter, we're looking at the idea of just some of the issues in church related to the relationship between the older people and the younger people. And we actually looked at this passage more in depth in our Familying series, which is on that loop, the slideshow loop at the beginning and end. That was last spring, where we talked about this idea. Because right here, Paul is talking to Timothy about what to do about the older people in your congregation, specifically the widows, and how to care for them. And so he's giving him some different instructions. But here in verse 8, there's this truth that he shares to Timothy. He says, "But those who won't care for their relatives, especially those in their own household, have denied the true faith. Such people are worse than unbelievers." And so I want to kind of pull this passage apart and talk about it a little bit. Because this passage here means that we, as followers of Jesus, need to care for, and we'll talk about what that word means in a second, we need to care for our relatives, even Cousin Eddie. Because even if we have a Cousin Eddie, who, again, if you've seen the movie, you know who Cousin Eddie is. Like, he is just high-level, just jerk/weirdo/. He's got a plastic plate in his head because of, you know, he used to catch the radio. Anyway, there's a thing he does, but I'm not going to repeat that. He's messed up for some issues. And so I just want to, you know, talk about that. In your family, as you consider the people that are around you, your immediate family, your extended family, and just think about, you know, what does it look like to care for those people, even that weird one, even that obnoxious person, even that person that maybe has said some hurtful things to you, or maybe done some hurtful things. So the first thing that Paul shares with Timothy in this verse is that caring is expected for relatives. Caring is expected. This isn't a, you know, if they deserve it, and this is kind of a theme we were hitting last week when we talked about turning the other cheek and letting them hurt you. But even if they don't deserve it, it's expected. And that's what he says in the first part here. He says, for those who won't care for their relatives. And this word care, the Greek word that Paul wrote to Timothy here, I think I have it written here somewhere. Yeah, it's pronoio. And the word actually, it's not just a good feeling word. It doesn't mean like, yeah, I care about them. It means to actually do something. And the word literally means to think beforehand. And so it's saying that those who don't think beforehand for their relatives. And so it's not a matter of like, I guess I'll have to do this, or I'll just be nice to you because I should, or even I don't want to. This word has way more of a proactive sense that says, you know what? I know how they are. I know what they're like. I know what they're going to do. And that's why I don't want to invite them. But this word means to say, you know, thinking beforehand, saying, you know what? I'm going to care for them. I'm going to care for them because they are my relative, because they are part of my family. And so he says, we expect this. And so there's a negative here. He says, those who won't care, it's an if-then. So he's saying, if they won't care, then there's something that's a result of that, and we'll get to that in a second. But again, this is an active word. This isn't just a put up with it. This isn't just a, you know, if they deserve it. This is saying, you know, and we'll come to this later, but God has given you those people. God has placed them in your life. And so it is our responsibility to think beforehand, to care actively for them, because that's what God has commanded us to do. And we'll talk about that in a second. So the first thing is that caring is expected for relatives. The second thing that we see here is that it's including even extended family. And I think it's easy because, like, typically, we, you know, our immediate family, mom, dad, siblings, you know, whatever that looks like. And, of course, immediate family changes as your generations change. You know, my immediate family involved two twin brothers and my parents. Now my immediate family involves four. I guess they're not all teenagers now. One of them just turned 21 a number of days ago. You guys can't count to eight, so... But, you know, so that my extended family or my immediate family has changed. But again, kind of that, like, well, we're pretty cool with us because we live in the same house, whatever. But Paul makes a statement here that it goes even beyond that. And I think that's where it gets tricky, because especially, you know, depending on where you are, what your age is, you know, being a parent is probably a big part of this, because your siblings that you guys were all super tight maybe when you were younger, now they raise their kids in a different way. And so you're kind of like, yeah, I don't know if I agree with the way they do that. Maybe you grew up in a family that didn't know Jesus and you came to Jesus. And so now you've got these people that don't know Jesus and, you know, like, they don't even need to worry about adjectives or adverbs because you just drop the F word in there for everything. And you're like, do I want my family around someone like that? Like, and there's all these things that are like, I just don't know. And Paul is very clear to Timothy that this isn't just for the immediate. This is for the extended family. And how do we know that? Well, because of what he says here. He says, especially those in their own household. And the fact that Paul uses the word especially those assumes that we're looking at everybody. He says, you need to care for all of your relatives, your extended family, every one of them. And especially those in your own household, in your immediate family. And that's what the context here is, those people that are in your immediate family. And so what he's saying is that it is our responsibility to care for the people that don't even fit. And maybe this isn't hitting, maybe it is hitting with you, but I know at least in my family, and I've watched my siblings, and just kind of like we know how it works in our family, but the other families, they're all weird. And they're probably going, oh, we know how it works in our family. But man, Sean's family, they're just so weird. And so it's easy to kind of to look at those other people. But Paul says, no. The assumption is you're caring for everyone. You're caring for all of those people. You're thinking about them ahead of time. So that not just those people, but then especially those in your own household. That there's an extended family issue that's going on here. And so the idea is that no matter the people that gather around your table, you need to care for them. Whatever they look like, you know, whatever Clark's family looks like. And I mean, obviously it's a comedy and everything that could go wrong does go wrong. But even still, like, there's this moment where there's still just, you know what, this is my family and I love them and I'm going to care for them. And I know that that's not easy, and we're going to come back to that in a little bit. But this idea of saying, you know, this is something that's expected, and I want you to understand that, because it's expected for our relatives, and it includes our extended family because of the third thing that Paul says to Timothy. And he says that failing to do this can extinguish your faith. And this is pretty intense. This is a pretty wild thing that Paul says, like, Timothy, if you don't care, if you're the people in your church, or if Christ followers, such as us, don't care for our family, even our extended family, even those weird ones, that doing so can actually extinguish our faith. And I say it in a nice way. Look what Paul says to Timothy. He says, those that don't care, especially those in our household, have denied the true faith. Such people are worse than unbelievers. Like, that is intense. Paul says, if you don't care for your family, you've just turned your back on your faith. And he says, you're worse than unbelievers. And just to be clear here, what Paul is saying, it isn't that if you aren't nice to that family member, you're going to hell now. That you lost your salvation, which I firmly believe is not possible. I can give you all sorts of reasons why I believe that. But the fact that he says that if you don't care for them, you've denied your faith, doesn't mean you're going to hell, doesn't mean you messed up somehow, and Jesus is like, I died for all of your sins on the cross except for the family one. What he's saying is that you are going against everything that Jesus stands for. Because Jesus, his whole ministry, his whole life, was an example of caring for others. And what did he do? He talked to a woman at the well, a Samaritan woman, a woman that wouldn't be talked to. She was a Samaritan, so she was an enemy of the Jews. She also was like on her fifth man. And so everything about it says like no one should talk to her, but Jesus talked to her. There were lepers. A leprosy was a disease where your skin was literally falling off of you. And Jesus, not only did the law say don't touch them because you will get ceremonially unclean, but physically you don't want to touch them because you would get it, because you would be contagious. And Jesus touched the leper. And everything about Jesus' ministry, there were some people that were crazy, they had demons, there were different things going on, and those would be like, oh yeah, they would stay away from them, and Jesus went to them. And so his whole ministry, everything that he did on this earth, was a demonstration of caring for people. And so if you say, I'm a Christ follower, and we talked about that in What is MC3 City, the very first week we talked about, or maybe it's the second week, disciplicity means, a disciple means we are a follower of a teacher, of a rabbi, of a leader. Who is that teacher, rabbi, leader? That is Jesus. So we are Christ followers. We are disciples of Christ. And that means we do what he did. And so if everything that he did was caring for the people that no one else wanted to care about, if it was loving the unlovable, if it was touching the untouchable, then if you're a follower of Jesus and say, yeah, and here's the thing. I think a lot of times we are so good at that out in our community. And I don't put that in quotes in a bad way, but like out there it's easy. Oh, I would be glad to spend time with that person. I care about their needs. I want to help them. I want to go to Oaxaca and serve these people. And yet... in our own homes or at our own family gatherings, we're kind of like, yeah, but they don't count. They don't count. That's not really the same. And part of that is perhaps our mentality. Well, I get to choose everyone else that I interact with. I didn't get to choose my family. I was born with them. So it's okay if I don't care about them because it wasn't my choice to begin with. And so Paul is saying that if you are not caring for your family, you've denied the things that you say you believe in. You've extinguished this flame that is the faith, your faith in Jesus. Because that, if we're followers of Jesus, then we should interact with everyone the way Jesus interacted with them, including our immediate family, including our extended family. And then he goes on and says that such people are worse than unbelievers. And what he's saying is that people that don't know Jesus do a better job than the people that do know Jesus. And he's like, that's embarrassing. That's embarrassing. Like, there are people that don't know Jesus and quote unquote, don't know any better. And they're doing a better job loving the unlovable relative, caring for the uncareable person. Is uncareable a word? I don't know. Than followers of Jesus. And he's like, step up. We need to be a better example. Timothy, tell your congregation, tell your church the importance of this because it speaks volumes to the people around. And so by not caring for them, you're denying the things that Jesus has done for the people around him. And you're, frankly, worse than people that don't know Jesus that do a better job of it. So, this passage here, this verse, just some very simple things. He says that caring is expected for relatives. that this is expected for all of us. Not optional. Do you get that? It's not an optional thing. It's expected. And I mean, again, I'm probably the crazy guy. I probably am the crazy one in my family because I'm like, who is that? Like, they're all kind of middle, but there's no real extreme person, so it's probably me. But I recognize that there's issues in our families. There's issues in my family. There are people that we would love to spend more time with. There are people we love to spend less time with. And it doesn't change anything. This is expected of all of us. And I know in your family, there are probably people that this is a very hard thing. This is very hard for you to even consider because of what they've done or how they might have hurt you. And I know there's layers of this, and I'm not excusing that. But I'm just saying that this is something that's expected, that it goes beyond just your immediate family, but even to your extended family, that those people need to be cared for. And if you don't do it, just remember that you're kind of denying what Jesus did, why he came, what his example was. So that simple scene from Christmas Vacation shows us the value of family at Christmas. So that's the command. That's the instruction that we as followers of Jesus have been given. That's what Paul told Timothy to tell his church. And of course, the letter was included in our New Testament. And that means it's an instruction for us as well as the church. And so that's what we're supposed to do. And I think, it's not gray. I think it's pretty obvious what we're supposed to do. I think that we all understand that. Now, whether that's something we are able to do, whether that's something we want to do, whether that's something that we can, you know, we feel like doing, is probably a different story. And again, it's one thing to know it, but it's a whole other thing to do it. And I get it. I get it that families are weird. Families are messed up. And let me just be completely transparent. In my family, my brothers, my parents, and Kendra's family, her brother, sister, extended family, like in all of our families, my brother is divorced. That's the only divorce that we even have a connection to. And that's not true. We have Kendra's aunt and uncle are divorced. And both of those happened in the last 5 years. So the idea of a blended family, the idea of divorce in the home, the idea of step-parents and step-kids, like, I don't even have that context. So I'm just being transparent. And even still, in our non-divorced family, there's still issues there. And I realize you add that into it, you add abuse into it, then this stuff gets ugly. And it doesn't change the command. It doesn't change the instruction. And so here's what I want to throw out to you is here are some things to consider when family isn't easy. I wouldn't be able to pull out all the individual applications of what that looks like, how this works for every one of our families, because they're so all over the place. There's so many different nuances and pieces and all the different parts of that. Some of you don't even know who your family members are. Maybe your dad walked out when you were little and you don't even know them. And so what I want to do is for the rest of the morning is just give you some things to consider. And I'm not, just as you process what this looks like. So if I'm supposed to care for my family, if I'm supposed to make a difference, if I'm supposed to think beforehand for the people that are in my family, not just my immediate family, but my extended family, here's some things just to chew on as you process that. Because I know it's hard. I know that there are some things that are difficult in this. There are some things that bring up issues. There are probably some people, maybe there's some people you haven't talked to for years because of an issue that happened in the family. And so I just want to throw out some things to consider and let you process it and take it from there. Let God work on your heart and ask God, if you would, for you to ask God to work on your heart for how to apply this and what that looks like. But the first thing I want you to consider is that family isn't an accident. Family isn't an accident. And even before I go any further here, we did a series. It was actually, I think, like our fifth series ever back in 2012 called Family Pictures. And that was on the slideshow loop, too. And the very first week, we talked about this idea as a whole point, about what to do when your family isn't easy to get along with. How do you deal with the hurt? And so you can find that, again, on the slide. But it was week one of Family Pictures. But the first thing here is that family isn't an accident. And in Psalm 139, this is a psalm of David. David was praying, singing, worshiping to God. And we talked about the psalms, and that's not on the slide, but we did three series, a summer of psalms, another summer of psalms, yet another summer of psalms, which is last summer. We talked about psalms. But this particular psalm, actually, was taught by Justin in our Spiral Bound series. And we did that on Judges. And actually, what was really cool is that Justin took this psalm and talked about Ehud and how Ehud was a left-handed judge, which meant that he was lesser. And he used this song to talk about psalm, to talk about how intentional God is with us. And so I want to explain that to us. This is David writing. He says to God, "You made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb." So you, every person, was created intentionally by God. Not by genetics, and that was a part of it, that's part of the process that God used, but everything about you was knit together in your mother's womb. God designed you. God planned you on purpose, which is why life is so valuable, which is why, in my opinion, abortion is a big issue, because God created every life. And then he says, "Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex." And since I'm picking on Justin, I remember talking to him a number of times, and he is an optometrist, and one of the things that was so amazing was how intricate the human eye is. Is this correct? Yep. And how that can't happen by accident. Like, what an amazing God that we have that can make something as intricate as the human eye. And he says, "Your workmanship is marvelous. How well I know it. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion, as I was woven together in the dark of the womb." Again, God designed every person, knitting us together, fabricating every part. He says, "You saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment was laid out before a single day had passed." And so David recognizes in this psalm that, man, everything, every part of us was designed by God. That everything about you was designed by God. Everything about you was intentional. God intentionally made you. And he intentionally made everyone in your family. He intentionally made every person that shares your last name, or maybe once upon a time did, or shares your genetic traits, or maybe through marriage you're connected, or you know how all that stuff works. But every one of those people, even Cousin Eddie, were created and designed and intended by God. And so as we look at these issues and we look at the challenges, just before you kind of dismiss, "Oh, well, that's them," you be careful. Because you don't want to unintentionally say, "Well, God messed up with that one." You don't want to say, "Oh, well, that they don't count." Because everything, everyone that was created intentionally. That it's easy to ignore. I wrote this. Before you quickly dismiss them because of their quirks, issues, or hurtful failures, remember that they are in your family as part of God's grand design. It's not an accident. It's on purpose. And again, you can listen to Spiral Bound, where Justin does an incredible job talking about Ehud. And in that culture, without spoiling too much of it, in that culture, left-handedness meant you weren't really as good of a person. But how God created Ehud that way on purpose. So don't forget that. Don't forget that in these people you interact with, with these people that frustrate you, that drive you crazy, it's not an accident. And I know that maybe if there's hurt, if there's abuse, that raises other questions like, "Okay, God, why did this happen?" There's more that we can talk about with that. But before you just dismiss it, don't ignore the fact that God intentionally created your family, that no one in your family is an accident, and you aren't an accident. And if you're that crazy person or that person that people don't want to talk to, like, God created you on purpose. He intricately wove you together in your mother's womb. He designed you. He has your days planned out. He has a purpose for you. So, that's the first thing to consider when family isn't easy. Second thing to consider is that children are a present. Children are a present. And this is, I think, sometimes is a challenge You know, depending on where you are, maybe this idea of 9 months of pregnancy is awful. So I've heard. It wasn't too bad for me. I managed. But something like that, where then the sleepless nights, am I ever going to get a sleep? Do I have to change another diaper? Did they really just get into everything in my pantry? Did that really just happen? Did they break that thing that my great-great-great-great-grandma gave me? Have they not come home on time again after curfew? And then, you know, even progressing as adults, like, my kids are jerks. I don't want to be around them. I'm not saying that I feel that way. I'm just saying that might be your perspective. And I think there's something important here to remember, and that is that children are a present. In Psalm 127, it says, children are a gift from the Lord. They are a reward from Him. And here's something. He goes on and says, children born to a young man are like arrows in a warrior's hand. How joyful is the man whose quiver is full of them. And certainly there was an idea here in this culture that the more kids you had, the better chance you had of having an heir, of having someone to carry on the family name. And of course, and we'll talk about this next month in our Deceiver series, The Deceiver, about the life of Jacob. You know, the oldest child, you needed a man, you needed a male to carry on the family name. And so that's part of this. I understand that the idea of having more kids is great because culturally that meant that you had someone to carry on the line and to provide for you and all that. But what I don't want you to miss is that the phrase that children are a gift from the Lord. And a gift is something, first of all, that's given that's unearned. So it wasn't anything that anyone did or didn't do to earn that. And, you know, maybe a case could be made for your second child. Say, yeah, I did such a good job with the first one. God's like, all right, you can have a second one. But, you know, obviously all of us, if you have children, you had a first child and there was nothing you did to earn that one either. And so they're a gift. And so it's unearned. But the second thing is that a gift is a good thing. A gift is something that's got value, that's pleasing, that's wonderful. Other translations said that children are a blessing from the Lord. And so this idea here is that every kid is a gift from God. And I know some of your stories, and that rings even truer because of some of the challenges you had. But every child is a gift from God. And so what I don't want you to do is to say, okay, I am so frustrated with this kid right now. I'm so frustrated with this infant, this toddler, this elementary school year old kid, these teenagers. I had four. I was just doing the math the other day. And I know that sounds weird, me doing math. But I had four teenagers at the same time. We had a 13-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 19-year-old. And we loved it. It was great. But for some people, that's like the scariest thing ever. But I was a youth pastor for a decade, so I went to school to work with teenagers. But anyway, there's this whole idea, I guess what I'm getting at, is it's easy to be like, these kids are frustrating. And I know as you get older, this is going to become more of a pattern, more of an issue. Like, you know, you're kind of stuck with them, at least until they're 18, as the state of Pennsylvania says, or the government of the United States. But don't miss, if you've got frustrations with your kids, and again, I'm probably speaking, many of you are like, my kids can't even talk yet. But don't miss that they're a gift from God. They're a present from God. And even the extended family, even those kids, like, I doubt my family is watching this right now, so I'll just say this carefully. Growing up, we had a cousin. He was just awful. Like, my brothers and I, he was just awful. Everything about him was just awful. I don't know what else to say. And he was someone else's kid. And I know, I know that my parents were challenged by, like, the way he was being raised. And yet, to say, oh, he doesn't count, he's not valuable, he doesn't matter, misses the fact that, no, he's a gift from God. He's a gift to their family and ultimately to our family as well. So we don't want to miss that. As you deal with the challenges, as you deal with the struggles, as you deal with the issues of all these people that you live with, Don't miss that children are a present. They're a gift from God. So, that's another thing to consider. Again, I don't know where that lands. Maybe that means nothing right now. But maybe it's something you just need to remember when you start to deal with those relatives, those cousin Eddies, those people that we are told to care for. Don't miss that they're a present. They're a gift from God. The third thing to consider is that honoring is for your benefit. Honoring is for your benefit. And I think one thing that's important to remember is that family was God's idea. Like, He invented it. He invented it. He designed it. And so this idea of honoring our parents is something that's meant for our benefit. Over in Ephesians chapter 6, Paul writes to the church in Ephesus. He says to that church, to the people in that church, "Children, obey your parents, for you, because you belong to the Lord, for this is the right thing to do." Now, if you've been coming to MC3 or watching online for the last month, exactly 1 month, you'd be like, "Wait, didn't you say hate your parents?" Right. What we were talking about with the Drastic series was the idea of, compared to our love for Jesus, we should hate our mother and father, our wife, our children, our spouse, because our love for Jesus should be that much greater. But throughout the Bible, it's very clear that we are to honor our parents. And so you're like, but those two things don't match. It makes me want to discuss this. It makes me want to question it. And I think that was Jesus' point. And that was the whole point of the Drastic series. Does Jesus really want us to go around with no hands or no eyes? No. He was saying we need to deal with sin. So here, very clearly, Paul says, "Children, obey your parents because you belong to the Lord, for this is the right thing to do." And then he shares this command from Exodus chapter 20, one of the Ten Commandments. "Honor your father and mother." This is the first commandment with a promise. "If you honor your father and mother," quote, "things will go well for you and you will have a long life on the earth." So there's a command here that we are to honor our mother and father. And there's, as he said, a promise tied to it that things will go well for us. And so this is an interesting question. And again, this idea of things to consider, this is something to consider. Because honoring doesn't mean you always do what they say. Honoring, you know, if you have a parent that's saying, "Hey, I want you to go, you know, can I give you $20 to go murder someone down the street?" That honoring doesn't mean you're going to go murder someone. Honoring means you'll ask for more money. No. Honoring doesn't mean that. Honoring means, like, no, I love you and I respect you, but I'm not going to do that thing because that's wrong. And so honoring doesn't mean you just go along with it. It doesn't mean you're some kind of slave, but it means you respect them. You respect who they are. You respect what they've done for you, which we'll come to in a little bit. But he says, honor your father and mother. And that's the same thing for students, too, for kids in Ignition. They're learning the same concept this morning about family and the gift they are from God. They're not watching Christmas Vacation, by the way. But the idea of honoring them says, I respect who you are, and I care about you. And there's a promise tied to this, and I don't understand how all that works, because honoring, again, looks different. But what does that promise mean? I'm not sure, because it's kind of unique. But I think God says, honor your parents and let me handle it. I think that's what it ultimately comes down to. Honor your parents and let God handle the details so that it may go well with you. And, you know, and I can just say from a practical standpoint, you know, as a parent, when I am honored, things go better for my kids. They do. And that's probably, maybe part of this is because we're sinners and we react. I mean, just I had a conversation with Jack just yesterday and was talking to him about something. And I said, you know, I said, I'm sorry that I said that to you. He said, Dad, I'm so sorry, because I was disrespectful in the way I brought that up. And it just changed my tone. If he was like, oh, Dad, I was right. I'm like, oh, you want to see how right you are? Can I have those keys, please? Like, it went well for him because of what he said. And so there's something here to this. And so in this whole context of family, in this context of your parents, whether they're older parents, whether they're younger parents, they're older than you, I guess. They're always going to be older than you. That's a certainty. Your parents are definitely older than you. Whether they are older in years or younger in years, we just need to remember that we need to honor them. And it might not be something that we're like, they don't deserve it. And we'll see in a second, they kind of do. But there's a promise here that says if we honor our parents, it's for our benefit. And so as you deal with that group of people around the table, and maybe that group of people is your parents, and it's just hard, can I just suggest that you honor them? And then trust that God will do his part. Trust that God that things will go well for you. And you'll have a long life on earth. And maybe that was added there too because he understands parents too. Like, oh boy, I brought you into this world and I can take you out of it. That would be a short life on this earth. But then there would be that murder thing. And again, that's frowned upon. So we don't do that. But then he goes on. He says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger by the way you treat them. Rather, bring them up with the discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord. And I think this is kind of tied to that on purpose. Because if kids honor their parents, parents can honor their kids. And again, not to be... to belabor this point from yesterday, but you know, just for me to say, Jack, I'm sorry. Like, do parents say they're sorry to their kids? They should, unless they're perfect. And if you're perfect, your name is Jesus. Otherwise, we fail too. You know, and maybe it doesn't work. Maybe it doesn't work with the infant in your arms apologizing. They're probably not going to be like, oh, it's okay, it's cool. But this idea of honoring kind of goes both ways, and it's for your benefit. And so when you deal with the people around the table, when you deal with the junk, when you deal with the ugly, just that's something to consider, that honoring is a good thing. And again, it doesn't mean following them exactly. We talked about this specifically in the Family Inc. series last spring, and that is on the slides. And we talked about what does it look like to honor, to encourage people to honor their parents so that it will go well for us. So family isn't an accident. God intended them on purpose. Your children, the children are a present. They're a gift from God. Honoring is for your benefit. And then finally, caring is your repayment. And we talked about this a little bit. We touched on it again in that Family Inc. series last spring. But it's just kind of a crazy passage. It sounds so practical, it almost seems like it shouldn't be in the Bible. And I know that sounds really bad for me to say. But it almost feels like one of those things that someone would say, and you'd be like, oh, yeah, it's probably, you would say it's in the Bible, but it's probably not. We talked about that last week. God won't give you more than you can handle. It's not in the Bible. It's just a cool phrase. A rose by any other name would smell as sweet. Still not in the Bible. That's Shakespeare. But this idea of caring as your repayment is actually biblical. And in 1 Timothy chapter 5, it's the same passage we started with. A little bit earlier in the passage, he's talking about widows. He's talking about those that have no family. And he's talking about how, I should also add this, that what they were doing for the church was had a widow's list. And it was a list of people that needed that they needed the church to care for. And I'm not going to get into all the details about that. You can read 1 Timothy 5 for all the rules. But talking about the widow, it says, but if she has children or grandchildren, their first responsibility is to show godliness at home. So he says, this is the first thing. Like, if there are kids or grandkids here and there's no husband, no spouse, it's the kids' or grandkids' job to care for them. Same word, to think beforehand. And he says, and repay their parents by taking care of them. Sorry, there's the taking care of them. That's the word, think beforehand. But to repay their parents. And so Paul says to the church that Timothy is leading, he's like, look, if there are people that don't have someone to care for them, it's the kids' job, it's the grandkids' job to care for them. Why? To repay them for what they've done. And again, that's the concept that I want you to understand here, is that, do something for me, ready? On the count of three, I want you to breathe in and then breathe out. Okay, don't hold it too long, I don't want anybody to pass out. Okay, we're going to breathe in on three. One, two, three. Did that work for you? Could you do that? Okay, you have something to thank your parents for. You made it. You're here. They got you this far. And maybe that's not your parents. Maybe that was a grandparent. Maybe that was a great aunt or an uncle or someone. But the fact that you're here is something worth thanking your parents. Something worth repaying them for what they have done for you. And of course, your grandparents got your parents there that far. And I know our tendency is going to be like, oh man, but they messed them up and then it messed me up. And that's why things are all screwed up. Like, but the point here is that there are some things that we can thank and honor our parents for. And we can care for them, not necessarily because they deserve it, not because of whether they've made the list is good enough that they've earned our care, but because of what they have done for you up until this point. And I know, and again, now I'm talking like an old guy. I get it. How old am I? I turned 47 this week, I think. See, I can't even remember. I turned 47? Okay. So I turned 47 this week. So like old guy, yes, speaking, I get it. But I can say as a parent, especially now with two of our kids kind of working their way out of the house, that there's a lot of things they don't have a clue that we've done for them. And they'll never have a clue. And frankly, there probably isn't even enough time left in my 46-year-old life for me to share with them all the things that we've done them. Because it has taken, you know, depending on how old they are, 21 years or almost 15 years to invest in them. And the point is this, is that as a kid, as a child, which you all are a child of someone, just to be clear, you might think, well, they don't deserve it, but I can guarantee you there are things that you don't have a clue that they have done for you. There are things that they have worked through. There are maybe something financially that they've had to do for you that you don't know, something that they had to give up for you that you don't know about, things that they've done for you to get you where you are today. I mean, most of you, like, you're all wearing clothing. You probably put that on yourself. Like, there's something there. You know, they taught you things. And so there's so many things here that Paul says to Timothy, look, caring for our grandparents, caring for our parents, that's just our way to repay them. That's to repay them for what they've done for us. And again, they might not deserve it in this moment, that you might be like, but don't miss that there's something to this, that this is something else that you can consider for them. And so these are the these are the things to consider when family isn't easy. Again, the command that we've been given, the instruction that Paul gave to Timothy, was to care for your relatives, immediate family and extended family. And if you don't do that, you're worse than an unbeliever. If you don't do that, you're denying that you actually believe and follow Jesus. And so the question is, how do we do that? How do you do that in your family? How do you do that with the people around you or not around you? Maybe you need to initiate a conversation. Maybe you need to make a phone call. Maybe on your way out of here, you need to send a text and say, hey, Dad, can we talk? Or to your sister, I'm sorry I haven't talked to you in years. I don't know what that's going to look like, but these are some things to consider because it's not easy. But recognize that your family isn't an accident. There is no person in your family that slipped through God's design or God's plan, even though, man, everything about them sure seems like they didn't quite make it. Somehow they skirted God. That your children are a present, and again, adult children, young children, unborn children, they're a gift from God. And so as you consider the challenges with parenting, as you consider the challenges with all of that, recognize that they're a gift. And so there's something about that that God says, I'm giving this child to you because they're valuable. I'm giving this child to you because it's meaningful to you. And there's something there that God has for you. That honoring is for your benefit. And so again, maybe if you just want to go selfish on this passage, say the only reason I'm honoring my parents is so that I'll get something out of it. It's probably not the best reason, but it's a legit reason. Because God says, hey, it's for your benefit. So honor them. What does it look like to honor your parents? And then finally, again, caring is your repayment. They have done so much for you. And honoring them, caring for them, is a way to repay them. And so, again, I don't know what that looks like. I don't know where this goes. I don't know what happens, you know, on December 24th or 25th or December 10th or whenever you're having your Christmas gatherings, if you do. Maybe it's New Year's. Maybe it's not at all. I don't know. But before we easily go, yeah, but this is so hard. I'm not saying it's easy. But consider these things as you process. What about them? What about that person? What about Cousin Eddie? My Cousin Eddie. What about Lewis? Is the uncle Lewis? Yeah. I mean, Lewis has his own age. Like, Lewis is probably worse than Eddie, to be honest, because he's just a really mean guy. But what does it look like to recognize their value, to care for those people? And I'll say this too. If this is hard, which it probably is for all of us. But if this is something you're like, I don't even know where to begin, we did a series called Sorry Not Sorry a couple of years ago. That's also on the slideshow here. But it's all about forgiveness. And very clearly, forgiveness is not deserved. We talked about that last week, the last week of Drastic, about turning the other cheek and imitating Jesus. And what did Jesus do? He died on the cross for us. Not because we came to him and said, we're sorry and we made it all right. Because we couldn't. Because there was nothing that we did to deserve it. There was nothing we did to earn it. And so he died to forgive us. And maybe, again, we don't want to deny our own faith and say, okay, if that's what Jesus did for us, maybe we need to do that for the family around us. So Christmas Vacation somehow shows us the value of family at Christmas. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. And God, I acknowledge, one, my naivete, my such small perspective on some of the issues that the people in this room, the people listening, watching online, have to deal with their family. I acknowledge that I don't get it all. But I do know that you have called us to do this. And God, I also recognize that this is not easy. And so right now, in this moment, we are praying to you, the one who knit us together in our mother's womb. We are praying to you and asking for your help to help us care for the family around us, to think beforehand for those relatives that we just really have a hard time. And again, there might be multiple layers of hurt, of abuse. And I just pray, God, that you would help us to come to a spot where we can love and care for them and respect and honor them in the way that you've called us to. And God, thank you for doing that for us, that we don't deserve it. We're all the Cousin Eddie. We're all the Uncle Louis. We're all the jerks. We're the sinners that you came and forgave on the cross, not because of anything we did, but because of what you chose to do for us. So help us to imitate that in the family around us. Thank you for everything you've done. In Jesus' name, amen.